Southern food has a history as rich as its taste. Red beans and rice, cornbread and pot liquor, fried chicken, fatback and biscuits. The history of this region's fare stretches from slave plantations, even to the boats, all the way to Montgomery bus boycott, and then the kitchens of today. Culinary historian John T. Edge is the author of a new book, The Pot Liquor Papers, A Food History of the Modern South. He's also the director of the Southern Foodways Alliance. It's a real pleasure. Thanks for coming.
Thank you, Celeste.
Can we start with what pot liquor is? Can you call this a salvage food?
Yeah. So pot liquor is the boiled down essence of a pot of greens or beans. If you throw a hock in and you throw turnips or mustard, throw a ham hock in or turnips or mustards and you cook it forever and a day, the liquid leavings at the bottom of the pot, that's the pot liquor.
And the irony is that when the pot liquor is where all the nutrients are instead of the greens that were pulled out.
It is. In enslavement era South, masters would remove the greens and reserve them for themselves. And the great perversion here is that the nutrients resided in the liquor, which the masters deigned to give to the slaves to feed them.
And this idea of salvage food, food that was trying to use every bit of a plant or animal, you describe that as being particularly Southern. Why?
We were poor for a long darn while. And out of poverty comes inventiveness. Out of poverty comes this ability to render beauty out of tragedy. And poverty is a tragic condition in which to live. And yet, out of that poverty, out of that need and want to eat close to the land, we created this beautiful food that sustained Black and white Southerners during the years after slavery, during the years of sharecropping and the like.
So you started this 60 years ago. You cover six decades in this book. Why did you start where you started?
1955 is where I began, and I began with the Montgomery bus boycotts. And that's where I believe the South begins to change. Fitfully, yes, but the modern civil rights movement is catalyzed by the brave Black men and women of Montgomery, Alabama, and changes the whole of the South. And if you want to apprehend Southern food, you want to apprehend what the South is becoming. 1955 is the year to begin.
So let's hear from Gibbs Knotts. He's a professor at the College of Charleston, and he wrote a book on Southern identity. And here he is talking about something which was probably pretty familiar to our listeners.
A lot of the tradition in the South is to have food that was grown. I mean, sometimes it was, you know, prepared by folks that didn't have a lot of money, and they kind of had to be creative with how they created flavors and put things together. And so there is an element, you know, it was farm to table before farm to table became all the rage.
So then let's go back to one of his forebears and hear kind of the same thing echoed here. This is Georgia chef and cookbook author Edna Lewis talking about city versus rural.
People living in cities can't raise their own food. It just seems that it's going to get worse the way it's produced. It has to be shipped before it's ripe. And you can't really get the true flavor of tomatoes and apples and peaches.
So would you consider farm-to-table to be sort of an essential element of true Southern cooking?
Farm-to-table is a term we apply now. It's a very modern term. It was a lived experience for people like Georgia Gilmore in Montgomery, Alabama, and it was a lived experience for people like Edna Lewis of Freetown, Virginia. It wasn't a marketing conceit. Now, too often, it's a marketing conceit. It was a way of life for Edna Lewis. They lived close to the land. They took pride in what they were able to wrench from the land. And it was everyday life.
How does that change the food, though? I mean, what's the difference for a cook, for someone designing recipes, between that turnip you just pulled out of the dirt as opposed to the turnip you got at Publix?
The turnip you just pulled out of the dirt, Edna Lewis would argue, tastes better, for one. You know from whence it came. You have pride in having raised it. It also makes an economic impact, as opposed to depending upon, you know, a farmer in California who grows your turnip, ships it in, comes through the Kroger, everybody's stepping on it, everybody else is making money on it. If you raise that crop in your backyard or on the farm or the back 40 of your plot, that economic power resides in your place and in your story, too.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking to John T. Edge. He's the author of the new book, The Potlicker Papers, A Food History of the Modern South. And we will be spending most of this hour talking about Southern food. So if you want to reach out to us and tell us what your favorite Southern food is, or frankly, if you have a question, this is the time to get that question in. You can call us at 404-500-9457 or tweet us. All right. Speaking of questions, let's start with the big one, which is, for your purposes or for culinary purposes, maybe, what is the South?
Wow. So I don't think I once thought about the South in opposition to the North. You know, and that's an old inheritance that goes back to the Civil War, to those polarities between North and South. I was once the kind of person that said, you know, I don't know about Florida. I don't know if they should belong to what we define as the South. And I don't know about Texas. You know, if you think about the South in a broad way, in an inclusive way, you recognize that pockets of Southside Chicago are deeply Southern. And you recognize the Great Migration brought so many African Americans out of the South in the early years of the 20th century. And there are pockets of Chicago that are deeply and profoundly Southern. Oakland, California, the same way. People who came out of Louisiana to win jobs in ports and the like. So my answer is the South is complicated, and our definitions of it are complicated, and the borders of it are porous. The deeper South, where I grew up in Georgia, where my family's from South Carolina, those definitions work. But I would rather think more broadly about the American South.
So even though it is decades in advance of the period that you discuss in the book, you do mention your graduate thesis in your book. And this was, you wrote it on the potlicker and corn pone debate of 1931. Now, what is pone?
Pone is an elemental cornbread, simply. You know, the kind of cornbread that is meal and salt and perhaps hot boiling water. Hot water cornbread is my favorite style. Crunchy on the outside, creamy, creamy at the core.
Okay, so this potlicker and corn pone debate of 1931 mm-hmm. was over whether you should crumble your cornbread into the potlicker or dunk it.
Correct.
And it's a great setup for the rest of the book because it's kind of funny, but it's also like, this is how seriously people take food, in the South at least.
Indeed. It was a debate in 1931. It was Huey Long, who at that point was senator-elect from Louisiana, the kingfish, the great champion of the working man, against Julian Harris.
Huey Long crumbled.
Huey Long crumbled and Julian Harris dunked. Or it may be the other way. It doesn't really matter, you know?
they thought it mattered.
They thought it mattered. And yet, to your point, they didn't really think it mattered. They used this debate about the relative merits of dunking or crumbling cornbread into pot liquor as a way to talk about race and racism and its impact, class difference, gender inequity, regional identity. Hundreds of people wrote letters to the editor of the Atlanta Constitution, voicing their opinion about potlicker and cornpone. And when they did, they revealed all these thoughts about this wide range of things and issues that Southerners confront.
So this is what you talk about in your book as being the complicated narratives of our food. And when you're talking about that, are you only talking about race? Slavery?
You start with race. You start with racism, I would say, more so than race. You start with racism and its impact on this region, because that's the grand scar. That's the most important thing to grapple with. And then you move on from there. But I begin this book during the Civil Rights Movement, at a moment when Black Southerners are leading the way for the South to grapple with its tragic history.
So then that leads us to one of the ironies of the book, which is that you're covering 60 years, and so you start in this era of poverty, where you can go to rural areas and kids are literally starving. And then you end up in this era in which poverty means obesity in many ways. Did you get an answer to how we got from there to there?
You know, it's all malnutrition. You know, it's poverty and hunger is one form of malnutrition. Overfeeding by way of fast food and other deleterious diets is another aspect of malnutrition. There are moments during our history when we thought we were going to fix this. The 1970s, which is often thought of this, you know, the kind of pet rock decade, was just a goofy moment in our history, was a really important moment in the South because Southerners, led by Lyndon Johnson and others, determined we were going to fix our broken wagon. But as for why we began my book hungry and end it hungry in a different sort of way, a failure of human possibilities.
So then let's bring us back to sort of the roots, quite literally the roots, with Edna Lewis. She died in 2006, famous Georgia chef. She grew up in Freetown, Virginia, as you mentioned, and this is from a 1983 interview she did with NPR.
That you had cows and pigs and chickens, and you utilized the composted manures of the animals, which enriched the soil. Of course, they added other ingredients like wood ashes and lime to help sweeten the soil, and the vegetables and the corn grew on its own steam without the boost from fertilizer.
So in the minute we have left before we take a break, this gets to this sort of deep love of the South, which is also combined with what you referenced before, the anger or disappointment. And how did you end up grappling with that yourself?
I'm still working. No, I mean, in all seriousness, if you read my book, and it was the same thing for me writing this book, I have moments of deep pride and just marveling at the creativity of Southerners, black and white, responses to poverty, responses to hardship. And moments later, I'm deeply depressed by the horrific decisions we made along the way. You know, the South had many moments to redeem itself. And along the way, we're deserted by our leadership. Our best instincts don't come to the fore. Even within the foodscape, we think about someone like Lester Maddox, a restaurant owner. Civil Rights Act of 64 is on the verge of passing, and Maddox threatens and cajoles and basically drives out black customers from his restaurant. He becomes our governor on the strength of that stance.
That's John T. Edge. He's author of the new book, The Potlicker Papers, A Food History of the Modern South. In a moment, we will pour a cold glass of sweet tea. First, though, food in the civil rights movement. This is On Second Thought.
I was raised in the country, that's a natural fact. Food on the table from the garden out back. Everyone working to make the land their own. Red clay cracking with the silver queens.